B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Steve Hackett's new record, The Edge of Light, comes out on January 25th, and he's my guest today on the Talkin' Rock podcast. He talks about guest players on the album, as he calls it, the United Nations of Musicians. We talk prog rock and when he thought it was at its peak.
Well, for me, I think the peak is now, because I think what I'm doing now, I'm more fulfilled doing that.
With Steve being a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member, we discussed that, and of course, we got into some Genesis talk. He told me about what really got Genesis on people's radar.
It was the minute that he started dressing up and being outrageous that we started to get front covers and started getting noticed.
Steve has a big tour planned for 2019, as well as a couple guest spots on some cruises. Even the band Queen came up, as Steve recalls an important decision that band made.
I tell you something about this, that maybe one of the most important decisions Queen ever made, because I was working with Brian May shortly after this.
You'll have to listen to see what that decision was. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Steve Hackett is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thank you as always for checking out the Talkin' Rock podcast. If you want to leave a voicemail, by all means, 248-586-2988. You can hit me up on the social media as well at Meltdown WRIF. My friend Al Beck comes on after the interview with Steve Hackett today and talks about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as they made their nominations known today. Linkin Park, Deadland Ritual. That's a new band with Geezer Butler. We got Guns N' Roses, Metallica news as well. And even who's playing between periods of the Winter Classic as far as the NHL is concerned. So that's all coming up here in just a bit. I was contacted a few weeks back to see if I wanted to talk to Steve Hackett. Of course, best known for his work in Genesis, but man, this guy has put out a lot of solo albums. He's worked with all sorts of musicians all over the globe. Just a real respected player in the prog rock community. Apparently he doesn't like the word prog, which we'll get into here coming up in just a little bit. But real great to talk to. And as I kind of talk about in my interview with him, prog rock is something I've kind of not recently discovered, but I guess recently got into with some of the vinyl I've bought recently. So this was like really cool to talk with him, because that early 70s stuff, I mean, between just think of all the bands, the Yeses of the world and the ELPs and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you lump Genesis in there as well. So it's a really cool conversation today with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member Steve Hackett on Talkin' Rock. You got the new record coming out on January 25th. Let's dive into that first, At the Edge of Light. And this is something you've been working on for a little while, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, about 18 months. A lot of people on it. A number of drummers, some from the States, from England, some from Iceland, from all over. It's there are people on it from Azerbaijan. As I say, you know, it's a bit of a world effort, really. There's Indian players on it. There's the English players, American, Swedish. Bit of a United Nations on record. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you started to make this record, was that kind of one of the things you were looking for, or is it just kind of the way it turned out?
Well, actually, you know, I did it with the previous record. I started working with people, and we had, you know, roughly the same number of people, you know, from all over the world. And I made friends with a number of people. You know, one Israeli and one from Palestine, and they were working together, these two. They were friends. And I thought, you know, in a way, that record showed what you can do if you set aside national differences. And I wanted to do something that was global and comprehensive, that had a peace message back then. And in a way, I've taken it one stage further with this. So you could construe that as political. But, you know, it's basically an album of songs. And there are, yeah, there is basically a peace message at the end of it. But, you know, we've got tracks like Fallen Walls and Pedestals. We've got Beasts in Our Time, which really alludes to, you know, world leaders who are getting a little bit too big for their own boots. And right at the end of the album, we have this collection of three tracks that run consecutively. First one is Descent, the second one is Conflict, and the third one is Peace. So it's like the build-up to war, a warlike thing. after that with Conflict, All Out Thrash, and then we get into the track called Peace, which is it's a lot of things. It's a love song, but there's also a peace message, and there's a spiritual aspect to that too. And there's lots of orchestra on the album as well as the rock instruments. So lots of different influences.
Yeah, listen to one of the tracks there, Under the Eye of the Sun. That's out right now. You can check out the video and stuff. And it's proggy. It's got the sitar there in the middle of whatever. But what I like about this, too, is you got the full listing here that you were just talking about, that you actually put some thought into this in this, like, Spotify world where you can just, like, play tracks or whatever. But this is the kind of record, and I like these kind of records, where you have to listen to it from start to finish or else it kind of loses its luster.
Well, for those of us who think that the devil is in the detail, it's that kind of album. There are a lot of arrangements on it. Not too many time signatures, so I don't think it's impenetrable. And basically, they are songs, but they are, a little bit like scenes from an imaginary film.
Yeah.
A track like, for instance, Underground Railroad was something that I'd heard about when I was in Wilmington, Delaware, and the story of Harriet Tubman, who helped slaves escape. So that was a network. So, we had a couple of Soul Sisters on this who worked with Pink Floyd. The McBroom Sisters, who are very famous. Lorelei and Durga McBroom with fantastic voices. And then I'd read a book called Underground Railroad, which was recommended by Barack Obama, and about the pre-Civil War situation, slaves escaping, and I thought we could kind of do a train song that went with that, which has dobro and harmonica and all those aspects of Americana and a couple of American singers on it. So it's a little bit like a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that song I was just talking about too, Under the Eye of the Sun, it's kind of like it does have like a sort of a soundscape, like you can imagine something that's like it being in a movie or something along those lines.
Parts of it I think would be that.
Right.
I think that I think that's one of the proggiest songs on the album. I don't much like the term prog. That's the funny thing, isn't it? Although they're apparently going to stick me on the front cover of Prog magazine here in England, so I shouldn't complain. It's a four-letter word, isn't it? It can put a lot of people off. I mean, basically, I grew up, listening to blues and jazz, which is another four-letter word. But I loved so much of that, and I didn't think it was impenetrable. I think, if the song is good enough, it'll go straight to the heart.
Yeah, it was funny because I was, a couple months ago, I was at home, and I was just kind of going through one of the TV stations that has, like, the music shows and whatnot, and they had a documentary on Genesis, and I just kind of started getting back into prog rock recently when I got back into vinyl with Yes and Genesis and, like, all this stuff, right? And so I started watching this. I didn't really know that much about the genesis of Genesis. And then I saw Foxtrot, and I was at a record store like a couple days later, and I bought it, and I listened to it last night again just to get ready for this interview and stuff. And man, the 70s, I'm just like, I'm going down this rabbit hole of all this prog rock. Sorry to use the term, but I mean, that must have been a great time, huh?
It was a great time, and we had some great songs on that. I think the most famous of them are the opening track, Water of the Skies, and then Supper's Ready, which is a great long anthemic thing, which goes on for about 23 minutes or so. But the following year, we did Selling England by the Pound, and at that time, John Lennon was living in New York, and he just gave an interview to WNEW saying that Genesis was one of the bands that he was listening to. At that time, we couldn't get a gig. We were in New York. We'd done something there. We were running around trying to do interviews. And then we had we had three nights at the Roxy in L.A. We couldn't get another gig throughout the rest of the States, even though we had a senior Beatle, singing our praises. So that's how things worked in those days. I mean, now, of course, you tweet that news and it would become, you might be that overnight sensation. But the wheels moved very slowly back in those days. But that's a favorite album, Selling England by the Pound, at that time. And I'm going to do the whole of that when I'm out touring next year. We're doing 160 gigs throughout the world. We will be doing an American tour. So I'll be doing that in its entirety and some other things that are equally well known.
Yeah, no, that's really cool, man. Yeah, you know, it's funny you talk about, you know, like all those years and stuff. I just saw an interview with you and the late Chris Squire and that, and Yes is one that really just has grabbed me recently. I mean, then you talk about the Jethro Tulls and the Moody Blues and Rush. I just talked to what's his name from ELP a few weeks ago, the drummer there.
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. There we go.
Yeah.
Carl Palmer.
Carl Palmer. Yeah, that's right. I had a brain failure there for a second. But, he was telling me, you know, I guess this was, do you think the 70s was like maybe the peak as far as prog rock is concerned?
Well, for me, I think the peak is now, because I think what I'm doing now, I'm more fulfilled doing that. But I think that there was a lot of stuff that came out of the 70s that was very interesting. But then I also think that the 1960s were hugely interesting, because I think we had fabulous artists from both sides of the pond. You know, I worked with some of the people that were on Woodstock. I got to work with the late, great Richie Havens. I managed to see Paul Butterfield and Mike Bloomfield playing live, who were, you know, not so long ago inducted posthumously into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Genesis was inducted. I was part of that. In 2010, we had the induction back then, and that was very interesting. Very interesting time, you know, 1960s, 1970s, very creative time, as is today. There are great artists today. You have Joe Bonamassa, fabulous guitarist, American. Mm-hmm. I've seen him a couple of times over here, and spoken to him a few times. In fact, it was Chris Squire who introduced me to him, so, you know, I find that interesting. I did a lot of stuff with Chris. We used to go and see a lot of acts together, as well as make albums together.
Yeah. You mentioned the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know if you know this or not, but yep. The nominations came down today. Did you see that?
Yeah, I heard about that. I was talking to someone about that Stevie Nicks was a part of that. That's I'm trying to remember who else. I haven't got the news in front of me, but...
Yeah, Def Leppard, you know, and The Cure, yeah, Radiohead, stuff like that, yeah.
Yes. So there's some Brits in there, and I'm very pleased when because I suggested publicly when I was in there being inducted, talking to the press that Yes ought to be inducted into that, and so that's come to pass, and it's great that they honor not just the people that you've heard about, but writers who've, you know, been part of. The songs that made up our youth, and that's important too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that like one of the pinnacles of your career, being inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Oh, sure. It was a great evening. Wonderful to be there. We were inducted the same night that ABBA were being inducted, and there were some great speeches. I also got to see Jimmy Cliff live. He was being inducted. It was a great time. Eric Burdon was singing live, you know. Great. Ronnie Spector singing away, sounding great as ever. Yeah, fantastic evening. Wonderful.
Yeah, and what was the last time you talked to some of the guys in Genesis?
Let me see. Peter Gabriel the other day, I was with him. He was doing something for his witness program, which is, you know, that kind of name it and shame it and film it and all that kind of stuff, you know. That was an art exhibition. Things were being sold for that. He's the last one I saw just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was watching that documentary, and they were showing how he would, like, you know, because in the 70s, I was just a little kid, and they were showing how he would, like, you know, dress up in all these outrageous outfits and stuff. You think that was just part of, part of what his character was, or was he trying to draw attention to the band, or maybe a little bit of both?
Well, you know, the funny thing is we were playing many of the songs that you heard. For instance, you mentioned Foxtrot. It was the minute that he started dressing up and being outrageous that we started to get front covers and started getting noticed. So it was the same songs that people used to just, you know, when we were doing college gigs, people used to wander off to the bar and they used to think that our songs are far too complicated. And it wasn't straight ahead rock and roll. So the fact that it had a very flamboyant front man presenting that stuff and living the songs and enacting it as much as possible, in some ways it was very similar to Bowie, or, you know, American counterpart would be Alice Cooper. Mm-hmm. you know, all very theatrical guys who, you know, used every device imaginable to draw attention to themselves. And I think that it can help to focus people on music that otherwise they might walk past. So presentation is always hugely important. If you're lucky enough to be able to afford a huge light show when you're out there and pyrotechnics and all the rest, but not everyone is in, you know, Pink Floyd's league as regards that. So you have one guy who is prepared to dress up and enact that. I think those days are not over. That's always going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I thought of when I heard your track, because that's the only one I think that's on the internet, is that right? That's the only track that you've released so far on Under the Eye of the Sun?
Under the Eye of the Sun, I think that's the only one that's out there. Okay. that people are aware of with a video. There'll be another one. There's going to be Beasts in Our Time. That's going to have a video. There's the Serbians are putting together a video that I've already shot out there in Serbia, and okay, the rest of it's being put together. But they make terrific videos. Looking forward to seeing how that comes out. I have to say, it's a terrific album. Out of all the ones I've done, this is the one that feels a bit like my dark side of the pepper, really. So I thought I won't be backwards in coming forward. And Americans are always saying, you've got to listen to this because it's great. You know, the English are much more retiring about it. But I actually think I've enjoyed this album, an experience of making it more than any other. I think it's my best produced album, and it's getting a great reaction already so far. So I'm thrilled at that.
And did your wife or something have some writing credits on it?
Oh, many, yeah. I mean, she's very, very clever, my wife. She's a great writer. She's been a filmmaker in her time. She's written books. And sometimes some of the more heavy riffs on it have come from her, and not just the lyrical stuff. And, she was trained as a violinist back in the day, and she's too embarrassed to play guitar in front of me, she says, although she used to sing in folk clubs. I said, we had this conversation today. I said, no, you shouldn't be embarrassed. I said, you know, I've got some guitars that you might be able to play very easily, you know, very light tension strings, nylon guitars, and I'm going to try and encourage her not to, you know, feel embarrassed about that. You know, music is all about confidence, being able to do that. Sometimes it can be hard, you know, with an audience of one. But I'm not going to judge. I think I would say, you know, anyone who wants to play, it's for you as much as for anyone else. If you get pleasure out of it, even if you're the world's worst singer, you know, a lot of people get put off by people saying to them, oh, you can't sing. You know, but some of us are just dogged enough to keep going and ignore that.
Yeah, I've seen Bob Dylan in concert. I think it all goes uphill from there as far as I'm concerned. But, one of my friends is in the band Sons of Apollo. Have you checked out Sons of Apollo? Are you familiar with that band?
You know what? Yes, of course. I think they're very, very good.
Yeah, because that song, that Under the Eye of the Sun, kind of had a little bit of tinge of that, at least when I was listening to it.
Yeah, well, it all depends where you're coming from, you know. I mean, I've got vocals on that. It's Amanda Lehman, who happens to be my sister-in-law, but she has a great voice. She's on that. So we did vocals twinned on that, and people have been saying that on some of the other harmony songs that we've done, you know, whenever there's high singing, they start saying, oh, it sounds a bit like John Anderson, and, you know, that. But that's one male voice, and one, you know, I'm singing at the top of my range, and it's lower for her. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as soon as you start getting harmonies, you start to sound a little bit like, you know, especially when it's boy-girl stuff, you start sounding like, you know, those great bands. You know, you're talking about Fleetwood Mac earlier. That great combination of male-female harmonies, and then it goes right back for me, you know, talking about Dylan, you know, about Peter, Paul and Mary doing Blowing in the Wind, which is up there on YouTube, and you watch that, and the harmonies are note perfect. They're just brilliant, of course. And Mamas and Papas, all of that. So I go back a long way with my harmony roots, not to mention the Beatles, the Birds, and of course my pals in Yes, many of whom I've worked with.
Yeah, Yes. You know, Jeff Tate kind of turned me on to Yes from Queensryche. We started talking about it one day. I said, put together a super group that you can play in front of. He goes, I'll just put one group in there. He goes, Yes.
There you go. Yeah. And you mentioned Queen, I think, there. And I worked with Brian May on a couple of things. We did an album called Feedback 86, which came out years after the event. But you know, he's a guy who's got great ideas, and not just as a great guitarist, which he happens to be, but, you know, thinks very, very quickly, guy's full of energy, and luckily he's kept, the Queen brand going, and so, you know, we all sort of doff our cap to him for that. That's great.
Yeah, have you seen the Bohemian Rhapsody movie?
Haven't seen the movie. I must say I'm not a great fan of biopics. I normally find that I struggle with it, you know, when I've known the real thing and worked with some of the people. So I'm sure it's very good. Yes, you know, what people say good things about it and all of that, but it's difficult for me, you know, maybe for people who never saw the band originally, but there's always going to be an aspect of the credibility gap and not being able to suspend my disbelief quite. You know,
yeah.
I can live the songs. I can enjoy that. I think they were a terrific band, and I'm sure that the movie may be terrifically enacted and all the rest, but I struggle with that a bit.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I even took my kids, who are 15 and 17, right. And they don't really, mm-hmm. They're not into Queen or nothing, but I'm like, you should see this because, this is a band, that kind of spoke to a lot of people and kind of meant a lot of things.
I tell you something about this, that maybe one of the most important decisions Queen ever made, because I was working with Brian May shortly after this, he said that the American record company, I don't know who they were signed to, but when, Bohemian Rhapsody was out there, the Americans wanted to do an edit of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, you either put it out in its entirety or you don't put it out. So that was a gamble that paid off for them. You see, they stuck by their guns and by their principles. And so that comes under the heading of you've got to sometimes make yourself unpopular to be popular or to be even more popular, to tell you the truth. And then, of course, the whole Wayne's World thing brought that whole deal back again. Because, Queen were not able to tour America for a while. They lost popularity, with that whole androgynous thing, taking that to extremes. And America wasn't into that at the time. But, perhaps posthumously for Freddie, the brand means just as much as it ever did now once again.
Well, that scene was in the movie where they were trying to get him to cut it out and stuff to edit up that song.
I didn't know that, but that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and that was one point where Mike Myers is playing the record guy and tells the guys from Queen that kids will never headbang in their car to this song. So that was one of the funniest lines of the whole movie, I thought.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's good. There's some humor in it then. Yeah, great.
Yeah, no, but I'm sure that didn't happen, but it was kind of funny that they put that in. By the way, not to go off on a thing on Queen, but that Bohemian Rhapsody was that was the most downloaded song, a classic rock song in the whole 20th century. They just announced that the other day. Did you hear that?
Oh, well, that must be, that's a funny thing because, up to then, the most popular song on FM, as far as I was aware, had been Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
Which are the most played. So that's another first. So, great stuff.
Well, listen, you got a lot of things going on here in 2019. You got the Selling the England by the Pound. You're going to do the entire album. You got two cruises right in a row, man. You're living the life.
Indeed. That's right. I am living the rock and roll life. Sometimes I'm at sea with it, literally. But I love doing the cruises. They've been great fun, and we're all in the same boat, of course. So I'll be doing the Moody Blues one, and I'll be doing the Yes one, and at some point I'm sure there'll be a Genesis one.
Oh, will there a Genesis cruise? Would you do something like that?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be killer. Well, I'll tell you what, man. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm still on the search for all the early Genesis albums. I've got about five or six of them, but Foxtrot, like I said, is the one that I just recently picked up after watching that documentary. And you'll be coming through the States in 2019?
Absolutely, yes. Of course I will. I will. I'll be there. I'll be doing tons of gigs. I'll be about maybe 2 months worth of gigs. I've got 160 gigs all around the world. They haven't been announced yet in the States, but that's coming up because our agent likes to have everything sort of, all the contracts signed before he releases the news all in one go. So that's the way we function.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you're going to be 69 coming up here next year. You're still into it? Still rock and roll and love the tour and love all that stuff?
Earth is just around the corner for me. What can I tell you?
Yeah. Hey, well, listen, Steve, thanks, man. The pleasure is all mine. I love talking to you, and good luck on everything in 2019, the record January 25th.
Thank you so much. All the best. Thank you. Nice talking to you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Steve Hackett today on Talkin' Rock, and I've gone down that rabbit hole like I was talking about, Slayer, with these prog rock bands that I was just talking about with Steve. But some of that stuff is just so good. You drop the needle on it or, you know, download it or whatever and just listen to it from start to finish, man. And it's like, I don't know, I've kind of discovered a lot of this new stuff nowadays. So it's it's kind of fun to check that out. But we were talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, of which he is a member with the original Genesis. And I guess they made their announcements. We actually touched on that just a little bit. But who's going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I can hardly wait.
Yeah, the ballots are in. The inductees for the 2019 induction are here. We've got The Cure, Def Leppard, Janet Jackson, Stevie Nicks, Radiohead, Roxy Music, and also The Zombies.
Yeah. Is that Rob and his brother? Rob Zombie and his brother?
It must be.
Robin Spider won. That's congratulations.
Yeah.
I should tweet Rob Zombie and say, dude, congratulations. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is great, man.
Oh, he's going to hate you.
Yeah. He very well may. But anyways, I could hardly go another day without, you know, knowing that Janet Jackson was now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, so. You've made it.
Yeah, there we go.
You've made it.
So anyways, well, good for the guys from Def Leppard. I mean, you know, how many more millions of records do you have to sell to get noticed?
Yeah.
You know what? I would venture to guess, outside of Janet Jackson, if you were to combine, well, I mean, Stevie Nicks and her solo stuff, I don't know how many she sold. Fleetwood Mac, of course, sold a ton. But, I mean, you know, you could probably combine the rest of those guys, and they probably still wouldn't match the amount of albums that Def Leppard sold.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, Fleetwood Mac, like I said, did sell a lot. But Stevie Nicks and her solo career, I'm not sure about that. But, you know, she's pretty hot back in the day.
Well, there you go.
I have to give her that.
There's an induction right there.
There you go. Congratulations.
The Meltdown Hall of Fame.
Welcome to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Right. So anyhow, but yeah, congrats to all those fine bands.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about Linkin Park? You know, this is one of those things we've talked about on this podcast before about, you know, these bands that lose a key member, should they continue or not? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look like Linkin Park has any immediate plans, but talking to, Dave Farrell, he said he can't really expand on the idea. There's nothing, like I said, there's nothing immediately in the works, and he can't really expand on it. But he does think it may happen. They all get together, they hang out, they enjoy it, and he thinks that eventually they will write some more Linkin Park music.
Yeah, I mean, you know, time heals all wounds, and we'll see what happens moving forward with that, because let's see. So Chester passed away a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And the guys haven't really done nothing. You know, Mike Shinoda's been out there touring and whatnot. And so we'll see if, you know, they can. How do you find a replacement for them? I don't know. It's kind of a tricky thing. You know, these guys, they still have a lot of music in them. They're still young guys. Yeah. So, you know, get back out there and get back on the horse and see what happens. I mean, you know, Stone Temple Pilots has done it.
Yeah.
Not super successful as of yet. The guys from Queen are out there, you know, different bands like that. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, It feels weird to say it, but you can replace a voice, you know, I mean, but
kind of, sort of.
I mean, it's not always successful. Sometimes it is, though. So it does feel really weird. It would be really weird without them, but I think they could do it. But I mean, I know that they did their tribute show, like that big memorial concert last year. And they had said back then that they were open to doing more shows. You know, Mike Shinoda, as you said, has been doing the solo thing. So we'll see. We'll see what they can come up with.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird road here for the next several years in Linkin Park. But hey, you know what? To be honest with you, Chester was a super nice guy. Mike Shinoda's a great guy. So best of luck to those guys. And, you know, I'm pulling for him. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we've been talking about this new GNR material that could happen, you know, Slash on this podcast and said, like, yeah, you know, I think it'll probably happen.
That was used. He was talking about new stuff from Guns N' Roses.
Yes. But that kind of launched us into this whole, oh, well, they're doing this GNR. They're being involved in the T-Rex tribute. Mm-hmm. Well, now it looks like they were not actually involved in this tribute and maybe never were.
I wonder how this stuff, you know, comes out, because I heard from a really good source that they'd covered one of the songs, Children of the Revolution, which we have talked about here.
Right.
And I also heard some more details about that, which I didn't bring up at the time, and I'm not going to bring up now.
Sure.
But, you know, who knows? That stuff just comes out of thin air?
Yeah, I mean, it was, someone reported on it, and it, like you said, it was like a reputable source.
Well,
but then the news comes out now that it was never confirmed. As a matter of fact, Children of the Revolution is being done for the tribute, but not by GNR. You're trading them out for Kesha.
Come on.
Yeah, Kesha.
Are you for real?
Kesha is confirmed to be doing Children of the Revolution.
Oh, my God.
Are you going to pick that up at your record store?
Probably not.
There you go. So
that tribute album just took a huge, giant turn for the worse.
Yeah, well, there you go. Something to look forward to or not.
So, all right, let's switch gears. We'll see. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, all right. How about Deadland Ritual?
There you go.
Yeah, you know, that super group we've been talking about featuring Geezer Butler, Matt Sorum, Frankie Perez, Steve Stevens. Now, we don't have a release date for an album or any sort of announcement about that, but we do have a song now, Meltdown.
Yeah, a little clip here. Let's play a little bit of this. This is called Down in Flames, a little tease on this Deadland Ritual. I'm going to tell you something, man. Geezer Butler may be, you know, one of the best metal players as far as bass players are concerned to come out of the 70s. I mean, that guy is just unbelievable. You go back and listen to any of those Black Sabbath records, and he is hardly strumming along with the guitars.
Yeah.
He really is in the pocket, and man, that's some good stuff right there. So, yeah, Matt Sorum, Steve Stevens from Billy Idol is just like, he's, what do they say in Boston? Wicked good, right? He's just really good. And, you know, so Matt Sorum has played with all sorts of players, and he'll tell you all about it. That's good stuff, man. Deadland Ritual with Geezer Butler and company. So no more info on that, though, huh?
No, we don't have any sort of announcement for an album or anything yet, but we've got a song, we've got a video, so it is coming together, though.
Yeah. So let's switch gears to Metallica here, and first of all, I just want to touch base on this one. Weezer, I guess, is going to be playing the between periods at the Winter Classic.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to be headlining the musical entertainment portion of the Winter Classic this year, and so it's the game itself is going to be Boston and Chicago.
At Notre Dame.
Yes, that's going to be Notre Dame this year. Starts at 1:00 in the afternoon on NBC, and as I'm just stretching for time while I look for the date.
That's where I think it's called Touchdown Jesus.
It's New Year's Day.
Tough date to remember.
Yeah, exactly. I failed you, the podcast, and the listeners, and that's what I'm here to do.
You've failed me for many years. This is not a first.
That's true, but that would be kind of cool to see them up there in between. I think the first and second period, or maybe I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So anyways, Metallica, let's move on, because this is what I want to talk about. Metallica, those guys have been touring. No, that new one, it came out, you know, 2 years ago now, and they're still touring on it. It's unbelievable how long these tours go now. Back in the day, you'd put out a record, and you would tour, you know, for like a year or something. You put out another record, you know, and now it's like, you know, these guys go on, they tour, and it's like 5 years between records for some of these bands, you know, and longer. But now they're helping out. They're putting back into the community.
That's right. We've had a lot of Metallica philanthropy NLRP type of stories lately, you know.
They give like $10,000 at like all the stops to like some pantries and different things, right?
Yeah, something like that. But now they've got a new one with their All Within My Hands Foundation, which is their charity. They're teaming up with the American Association of Community Colleges to kind of get a scholarship program going. And it's kind of based more in the like the trade school, mm-hmm. you know, kind of getting people out into the workforce again. Mm-hmm. So they've got 10 colleges from across the country, and I can let you know whereabouts those are in a minute. But these 10 colleges each are going to receive $100,000 to support more than 1,000 students in training and getting them ready to enter the American workforce.
Yeah, it's cool, man. We need some more people out there, you know, getting dirt underneath their fingernails.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you go to college. It's not all about being a brain surgeon.
Right. And you know what? I think those scholarships are great, too, you know, for, you know, like you you know, said, like for a doctor or something like that. But it is important, too, to get the trade schools and, you know, just get people out in the workforce. It's kind of nice that they're doing that.
I slept my way to the top.
Yeah, well, that's another podcast.
My 10 years of college didn't do me any good.
Yeah, right. All I can think is lots of people go to college for 7 years.
That's right. Yeah, they're called doctors. Yeah.
That's right. But yeah, colleges in North Carolina, Oregon, Illinois, Baltimore, Wisconsin, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Texas, Idaho, Washington, Kansas, all getting, I guess if we did the math there, Melton, it totals up to $1 million there.
Well,
you're for the scholarship.
You are quick at math. There's no question about that. So 10, 100,000. Okay. So anyhow, give your socials out. Let's go.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right. At Meltdown WRIF, you can follow the show as well at Talking Rock with one. That's talking without a G. Talking, I suppose. And thank you so much for checking out the podcast as we get ready to close out the year. Only one more week left here before I take a sabbatical for a week and a half around New Year's. So I'm hoping to get some guests on next week. Nothing in the pipeline yet. Might do like some sort of a best of yet. Haven't decided. Let's see how lazy I am next week.
Heading into vacation?
That's right.
You never know.
Getting ready to punch out. Hey, thanks so much for checking out Talking Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.